From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. You'll know my next guest is an investigative journalist, a true crime author, and their most recent book, Final Exams with Dr. Cyril Wecht, is available at Planet Ann Rules and, of course, on the Internet. Click the link in the show notes. I've also heard that for the last little while she's been acting as Donald Trump's spokesperson, but I'm not sure if that's true or not, but we'll find that out. Hi, Donna Kaufman. How are you? Did I lose her?
No, I'm here.
You're not laughing at
my joke. Though.
You're not laughing at my joke.
Oh, I didn't hear it.
Well, that's probably best. I said for the last little while you've been acting as Donald Trump's spokesperson. Is that true?
Yeah. Yes, that's true. I want to tell you how many hot chicks he's banged.
Yeah, there you go. Now, who's this, the alter ego, Miller? Is it John Miller?
Yes, John Miller, by the way. This was a phone call that was made to a reporter in 1991, yeah, at the time of which there was and still is a John Miller, who's a very famous spokesman.
Yeah.
And that John Miller started in Los Angeles as the LAPD spokesperson. Then he went to ABC News.
Yep.
Then he went to New York City spokesperson. Then he went to become the FBI spokesperson. So every reporter knows John Miller.
That's right.
And certainly John Miller is somebody that Trump would have seen on television. So for him to pick a name out of a hat, and, you know, he picks John Miller, and then he picks another name, John Barron, B-A-R-R-O-N,
yeah,
and he goes on to name his last son Barron. So at the time when this happened and the phone call was made to this reporter to say, well, he's too busy to talk to you, Donald's too busy to talk to you, but I'm one of the few people he trusts, and I know all the words, and the beautiful words. And then he said, it goes off into how every woman from to Madonna want to sleep with him, and there are only so many hours in a day. He tries to get them all, but, you know.
Yeah.
and he goes on and on about what a great lover Donald is.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's bizarre.
Yeah, he's...
So then somebody hears that, and they approach him, and they go, Donald, that sounds just like you.
Yeah.
And he says, yes, it was me. I was just joking.
Yeah.
So now it's come out again. The person who originally reported this said, there are only two tapes of that. He's got one. I've got one. I don't know where mine is. It's hidden somewhere. And Donald must have leaked that. And everyone's going, well, why would he leak that? It makes him sound terrible. Well, it came at a time when his butler, Colonel Klink,
yep,
was saying all these horrific things so threatening to Obama that they sent the Secret Service,
yeah,
after the guy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, let's string Obama up like the monkey he is. I mean, just, yeah, horrible, horrible things that this man, this butler, is saying. I know about you, Dana, but if my butler does that, he's out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you know, I would fire my butler for putting the forks on the wrong side of the plate, let alone, you know,
yeah,
endless Facebook pages of hate-filled speech.
But anyway,
and then, of course, the taxes. So did Trump leak this thing again, which he now says, it doesn't even sound like me. That's not me. I have no memory of doing that. So does he really have no memory? Is he having blackouts on top of everything else?
I don't know. You know, Donna Kaufman's here. She's an author, and we're just going to have fun tonight, her and I. We're going to talk about anything and everything. But really, Donna, have you ever seen anything like this? I haven't.
Oh.
This is unbelievable.
Yeah, and I want to, just on behalf of the American people, apologize to our friends in Canada for what they see.
Hey,
I mean, this is not who we are.
You know what? I don't know if you know this. I hate to interrupt, but there was a big brawl in the Canadian Parliament today, and true story. Justin Trudeau is accused of elbowing a female member of the New Democratic Party, and he's kind of saying, okay, I did it, I'm sorry, I'll make it up. But, oh yeah, no, the Canadian, bottom line, Donna, is governments and politicians, I think they're just all nuts, aren't they?
Well, try to comport yourself with dignity when you see a bad example being set. And what do you think about the Philippines? Here you've got a man who's the former prosecutor, he was just elected president, and his platform was, I hate drugs. If your kid is on drugs, I am coming to your house and I will kill him.
Nice.
I will kill him. Drugs. Yeah. Well, that's a campaign promise.
Yeah, no, that's,
and they elect them.
Yeah, I know. The Donald Trump of the Philippines. It's amazing. Now, I've got the TV going in the background here, and Megyn Kelly is on. Now, did you have a chance to watch the Megyn Kelly Donald Trump interview?
No, I didn't. I saw some clips on that. I mean, Megyn Kelly is not my ideal either.
Me neither.
She has said some stupid racist things her own darn self. But certainly what he has done to her, now you could say she got multi-million dollar book deal and re-upped her contract for many, many millions.
Mm-hmm.
So it maybe didn't hurt her career. But it sets the bar low.
Yeah.
And again, he's saying, did I say that? Did I call you a bimbo? Oops, sorry.
Yeah, I know.
But what does he have memory problems?
I don't know, and he could have, but it's just the way that this election cycle, and of course now they're going after Bill Clinton, and this craziness that's going to go on for months, if not years after, because who knows who's going to get elected out of all this, makes you wonder just what the public is thinking. Do you think, Donna, that the public is really that angry, or they're just having a ball watching all of this?
Well, I'm of two minds. First of all, it is great entertainment.
Yeah, yeah.
My first occupation is, and always has been, continues to be, comedy writer.
I know. Yeah.
So I'm just saying, this is just, you know, milk and honey. But I have to live here, and I have to see the repercussions of really Tea Party politics, which came in out of, you know, a hatred for Obama. And our Congress saying, we're not going to pass anything he gives us, and all sorts of slowdowns in Congress and the Senate, you know, which have to be approved on something before he's allowed to sign off on something. So they were stopping various things like health care and, you know, all sorts of things, judicial appointments, because they didn't like him. And all the racism that is inherent in a segment of the population came full front and was encouraged to be exclusionary and mean.
Yeah.
But, you know, so that's one side of it. I do see the entertainment side. On the other side, everyone's going, those who go say, we need to have a clean sweep. We don't want a politician in there. That's the problem. Experienced politicians. No. We need someone who has no ties to. Well, actually, Obama had no ties, and you saw how that worked for him, where his first 6 years were stymied by no cooperation. So with Hillary, we have, and that's also true of Bernie. Bernie's an outlier, Bernie Sanders, who has no friends in the Senate. That's why he's just pretending to be a Democrat for this run.
That's right.
you know, this is... This we hate all politicians garbage is a real bad path to go down.
I think so.
What we need is somebody who has the relationships with both sides of the aisle, where Hillary can pick up a phone and say, you know that farm bill you've been trying to get through? I can help you with that. I will send assistance to you, but I need you to sign sign off on this Supreme Court justice, or I need your help on this. That's politics. That's how an experienced politician gets things done. And if they are recalcitrant, she can say, I want to show you the photos of Vince Foster after I killed him. Now, you know, accidents happen. No, I'm kidding about that. But, I mean, the point is, you need somebody who not only knows who these people are, and Trump has no clue, but who has, you know, been with them through many, many years. She knows their family. She knows their district. She knows their, you know, their pet projects, their families. That's what you need in politics, somebody who knows. And, of course, we have our checks and balances, so no one can pull any fancy stuff.
So,
Donna, but, you know, this logjam is ridiculous.
Yeah, and you're right. Donna Kaufman's here. And what about, we're going to get off politics and get into something you and I like talking about more, is a crime and punishment. But I do want to ask you, with these two very unpopular candidates, isn't a VP pick so important to either one of them?
Well, I don't think that anyone's going to choose a candidate based on who the VP is. It's probably more important for Trump because Americans who vote for him will want to say, well, I'd like to have somebody who's actually been to Washington, D.C. and who maybe knows how to, you know, talk to people. With Hillary, you know, I don't know. People go, well, she wouldn't dare pick a female. Well, why not?
Why not?
Had
46
presidents that are male president, male vice president.
Yep.
Why not?
Sure.
But whatever. I trust her judgment. She knows how to choose somebody from the correct area, which will bring her votes. You know, that's a classic politician angle. Is you find somebody who's strong in the physical part of the country that you're not strong in. So there's some minor advantage to that. But, you know, and today I heard a radio talk show person say, I'm not going to vote for her just because she's a female and I'm a female. That's insulting. And I'm thinking to myself, well, tell that to somebody who's an L.A. Dodgers fan or a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. That's exactly what you vote for, the people that you like, who are like you. So don't give me that stuff. And she's far more popular than, you know, the other side would have you believe.
You're right. Donna Kaufman's here.
How's Justin doing, by the way, except for elbowing?
Well, besides the big fight today, he's doing well. Of course, we've got the big wildfire up here in the Fort McMurray, over 80,000 people having to be evacuated and billions of dollars. And, you know, you got to give him credit. I ideologically, I don't believe in the same type of politics as he does, but I'm also bitter because I was around when his dad was prime minister and he was one of the worst. So you can't.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. You can't judge. We're still suffering in the West, in Canada, from some of the policies of his dad, and that's 30, 40 years later. But you can't judge him just on his father. So yeah, I'm willing to give him a chance. But let's get off politics, Donna. It just drives you crazy anyway.
I can go on and on because I was curious about his speech in front of that mathematical equation.
Oh, yeah? Well, he's no dummy. He's a smart guy.
Yeah.
He's a very smart guy, and he has that.
Joe, but, you know, if you're going to do something, wouldn't you rather have somebody doing a show about, you know, mathematics? Formulas, then I banged Madonna. Or
exactly.
Bang me. I mean, come on. This is inspiring, kids.
No. I couldn't agree more.
Well, for him,
he's a good role model. He is. He's a good role model, and I'm biting my bottom lip when I say that, but it is true. Donna Kaufman's here. She's a journalist and an author, and, of course, their book, her and Dr. Weck's book, Final Exams, can be found at Planet and Rule, or just click on the link in the show notes. Now, I want to get into talking about role models and, of course, the death of Prince. The media again, put, you know, you and I could talk about all the celebrities, the Heath Ledgers and the Anna Nicoles and all that, but here we go again with Prince and the cause of death and what really happened and the speculation and the media and all that sort of stuff. What do you think about the death of Prince?
Well, when they first said we had to land the plane, this is 6 days before,
right,
in another city because he had some sort of flu incident on board, and we had to land the plane and give him emergency medical treatment, I said, uh-oh,
yeah,
drug addiction.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, we were right. You don't land a plane because somebody's having a flu attack.
Yeah.
You land a plane because somebody is unconscious. And the paramedics came on board that plane and gave him Narcan, which is something that you inject into a person, and it brings them out of it. You know, the famous scene in Pulp Fiction where they bring Uma Thurman's character back from a drug overdose, it's sort of like that, not quite like that, but, you know, it is sort of an amazing drug that now our police forces are being trained to use because it's so effective to bring people out of opioid coma. So I had a feeling that he was going to have some sort of drug issue. And then I also knew that he had problems with his hips. He had been using a cane for the last several years, and he was always wearing these tall high heels, and he was a little bitty guy. I've worked with him several times. Nice guy, funny as heck, but you know, quirky. And he would jump down from the stage onto the floor, or jump from an amplifier onto the stage, and that has to have some issues. And so he had need for two hip replacements and two ankle surgeries, and it's unclear to me at this time if he ever had those or if he was just suffering. But either way, he got addicted along the way to Percocet. Now, I'm saying this because the autopsy report is still maybe a month away from being released, and
right,
we don't know exactly what was in his system at the time,
yeah,
but something caused him to go into central nervous system failure, and it was also, from what people who work around him were saying, is that he had an issue sleeping, and you take these central nervous system depressants like any kind of thing that ends with PAM, benzodiazepam kind of drug,
right,
there are scores of them, or you take Percocet, which you can take for pain, and you add into that self-prescribed sleeping pill, or prescribed by a separate doctor that doesn't know you're on all these other things, and there you have the Heath Ledger thing, there you have Anna Nicole Smith and Michael Jackson, and all of them had that same problem where they were self-medicating, and it's always going to be a tragic result. Dr. Wecht wrote a letter to Dr. Cyril Wecht, is my co-author. He's probably the world's best-known forensic pathologist or medical examiner and lawyer.
You bet.
Performed personally 20,000 autopsies and has consulted on another 40,000 death cases, and we're working on our fourth book together. But he wrote a letter to the editor of USA Today where he said now 50% of the cases that he sees on his coroner's lab are opioid deaths. And these are people who don't think of themselves as drug addicts. No. Drug addicts are these shady guys in trench coats who try to sell drugs to kids. No. I'm a legit drug taker because I have a prescription. I have doctors. And, you know, so they are deluding themselves into thinking there's no harm done. And, you know, you get addicted to pain pills, then you have to take more, and then you can't sleep.
Yeah.
This is exactly what Michael Jackson went through, too. And the reason he got Dr. Conrad Murray to give him propofol was so he could sleep. And propofol put you into a coma, put you into the kind of coma for that one could perform a surgery. That's why, you know, you go in for a surgery. They give you propofol into your veins. Each little vial only lasts 10 minutes. So you've got to be there constantly filling up the bag with more and more and more, or the person will come wide awake. And it was the only way Jacko said he could get any sleep. So I suspect that when all is said and done about Prince, we're going to find many of the same stories that we've told. You know, our first book, A Question of Murder, is about Anna Nicole Smith's drug death and her son's, which Dr. Wecht worked on. And the second book is called From Crime Scene to Courthouse, and that's about Michael Jackson's demise. And, you know, it's all very clear. It's just a tragedy. Minnesota, the state of Minnesota now, is having to crack down on opioid-writing prescription doctors. And that's, you know, good luck, you know, because these celebrities who are so wealthy, and this is, again, a common theme, you know, if one doctor won't do it, another one will.
Yeah, no, exactly. And with the Anna Nicole Smith case and Howard K. Stern, and they try to go after him and the doctor and all that, and yeah, it's a difficult thing. But what about the public's perception, Donna, of these celebrities? You know, they put them up on a pedestal, and they deserve to be. Hell, we can go back to Elvis, for heaven's sakes. Put them up on that pedestal, and then you find out the truth after. Well, it's their legacy, I guess, but nothing really seems to get done through the governments or the doctors as far as this prescription shopping or this problem with prescription drugs.
Well, and the celebrities try to get around it by having the people who work for them find doctors and get the prescriptions under their names, because now the feds have, you know, you write a prescription, it goes into a federal data bank if it's a high-level narcotic, and so that should be all easily seen on a computer screen. So you have to have multiple names, which Anna Nicole did, which Michael Jackson did, which I suspect we're going to see with Prince as well. But what can be done? Well, we just got to keep nailing away. We've got to make it so repulsive to people, as we have with smoking.
Yeah.
You know, now, I don't know how it is there, but, you know, California really kicked off the ban against smoking so that it's so uncool to smoke. If you see somebody walking down the street with a cigarette, you give them the evil eye, and they're going to quit soon enough. I mean, they can't take the pressure. You know, so that's what's got to happen. It's got to happen in families, and it's got to happen with parents being more aware. But here's the other thing, is that these opioids are, they're making synthetic opioids, and also synthetic marijuana and synthetic drugs that they market to kids. They look like they're bubblegum cards or something. And you go to a head shop and you see these things, and wink, wink, it's supposed to be a supplement. But you look at the print, it's from China, and it's making you feel good, and you buy it, and you think you're taking acid, LSD, and you're taking some kind of synthetic drug that's made in some Chinese garage with no kind of responsibility, no legal barriers to selling it here, and every time there's a fatality, they say, okay, well, here's the chemical breakdown. That's now illegal here. And so back in China, they go, okay, well, let's put 2 teaspoons of this instead of 1, and now we have a whole new drug.
Yeah.
So it's just horrible what they're doing. I mean, I'm not, I grew up in California, and we did a lot of, I shouldn't tell you this because you're, I think the statute of limitations is up. But, you know, I mean, you know, people did drugs, and you did organic drugs. If you did mushrooms or something, you knew what you were getting. You really, it wasn't a problem. Well, it's not that way anymore. Anyone who does that stuff is taking their lives into their hands. Yep. Unless they have a chemist giving it to you, there's no assurance, no quality control. So you don't know what you're taking, and it's so dangerous.
And that's the question about even up here. We were talking about Justin Trudeau and in the States about the legalization or the decriminalization of marijuana, and I think that the term quality control, Donna, is so important. What about that? Canadians will be seeing that very soon in the new year, the decriminalization of marijuana, states like Washington State and Colorado and others, yet you still see statistics of marijuana-related deaths in traffic accidents and all that. Is there a way to have quality control when it comes to something like marijuana?
Well, you can do your best by, in fact, if I drive around L.A., there's not a block that doesn't have a storefront that not near a school, not near any children, but with a green cross in it, and you know that that's a government-sanctioned place where you can buy. If you have medical marijuana need, that's where you can go. The quality is 100%, and they check them out. Buy your stuff there. If you need to do that, that is the place to go. But buying it from your friends and stuff, not a good idea, because there's synthetic marijuana now, and it looks just like the real stuff, except it's not. It's made in some kind of, usually China, because they're flooding us with the stuff. It's easy to get across borders, and, it's undetectable. And but it's also no quality control. So, be careful, kids.
It's going to be a tough one. Donna Kaufman's here. She's an investigative journalist and a true crime author. And we're talking about a little bit of anything and everything. And I want to get to some of these true crime TV movies that have been on.
Yeah.
I got to admit, the O.J. one, I tried to watch it. I loved David Schwimmer. I had to laugh when I saw John Travolta playing Robert Shapiro. A couple of episodes in, I couldn't watch it. It wasn't for me, but I want to get your thoughts on this. Of course, the Making the Murderer, we all have our opinions of that. Now the producers are coming out and saying that Making a Murderer Part 2 will be around the corner. We could have guessed that. But what about these true crime movies? Obviously, there's a desire. The public wants to know. But are they accurate? Are we actually seeing something that's credible on the screen?
Well, in terms of O.J., maybe it's because I'm in L.A., and my transfer from comedy to crime happened during at the very beginning of the O.J. case, so that really was a game changer for me, and I lived both trials very carefully and all the follow-through. So I loved it. When I first heard that they were casting Nathan Lane, who I know from Broadway, and F. Lee Bailey, I said, what? Because, he's a flamboyant, he's very out and gay actor, and he's very theatrical. And I thought, that's not who F. Lee Bailey is, and then I could just imagine him, he's the guy from The Producers singing, Springtime and Rockingham, which would actually have been, a ratings hit, but he toned it down. I love the casting. I love the storytelling. It wasn't all accurate, but God, they had so much content in those 10 hours. But I hear what you're saying. Maybe it is that I'm so close to it and the Americans are so close. But having said that, I'm thrilled that there's attention paid to true crime.
Yep.
And now people are looking at true crime. My gosh, there's good storytelling there. But I'm not happy about the way it's going. In fact, Making a Murderer is an absolutely wretched treatment of a victim. And this is the way it's going to go with these killers now, who get publicity and want their trials over. paid unless something happens. So they're very eager to participate in a defense-tilted, dramatic, either a documentary or a film. You know, they're very... we've got one coming up the end of the year with JonBenet Ramsey.
Yeah.
And it's going to be multi-part. Well, where do you get the photos? Where do you get the home movies? You get that from her dad, mom's dad. But you get... So you've got the cooperation of the family. And if you, as long as you have that, you're not going to be getting the actual story. It's going to be another defense-oriented mischaracterization of the facts. It'll just be a shame. It'll be an absolute shame. And now they're doing that. There's a movie being done about Scott Peterson. Oh, my God. And the Menendez. And so all we're not seeing... the hardworking prosecutors and cops who put these people exactly where they belong. You're seeing the defense teams who have nothing, no moral reason to tell the truth, but they can make money lying and giving people, you know, other suspects and stuff that didn't get anywhere in the trial and in the investigation because it was horse pucky.
You know, if if I could reach through the phone right now, I would give you a big kiss because you are so dead on this.
Yeah, it's tragic.
Yeah.
It is tragic. I'd rather not have any true crime story if this is the way you're going to tell it.
Yeah, that Making a Murderer, I watched it, and there's so many times I was screaming at the TV just wanting to reach through. But you know, the people are going to watch it, and they're going to come up with their conspiracy theories, and they're going to do whatever. But, you know, getting back to JonBenet Ramsey, the only time in 16 years that I've done this show that I ever refused to put someone on the air was John Mark Carr when I interviewed him. That creepy SOB... I don't know. He apparently he turned into a woman or something, but he, there's a special place in hell for him, and I'm not sure if he was involved.
He was just a goofball,
a nut.
But there have been affiliated with the defense attorneys a number of, and you don't have to have a license to call yourself a PI in Colorado.
Oh, really?
Just one, and there are a number of people who have done documentaries and who are all over these People magazine stories and Us magazine. There's one guy in particular, I'm not going to say his name and make him happy, but this guy has been finding anyone dead. It's sickening. He must, like, go to the cemetery or look at obits. Here's a dead guy. Here's somebody that I could say was the suspect, and it's absolute trash.
Yep, absolutely. It's to get your 15 minutes of fame, Donna Coffman.
Because the dead can't sue.
Nope.
And so you can say whatever you want. But, you know, the facts are, if you want to know the facts about JonBenet Ramsey, read Dr. Weck's book, which he did not write with me, but it's the best book on the subject. It's called Who Killed JonBenet Ramsey, and it talks about this was a sex crime, and we've discussed this in many times with you on the air, but, you know, all the answers are in that household.
Yeah, no, for sure. Donna Kaufman's here. Yeah, their book, her and Dr. Weck's Final Exams, is available at Planet and Rules. Speaking of lawsuits and everything, and he's been bumped out of the airwaves a little bit from Mr. Trump, is Mr. Cosby. And I'm sure that you are still on that story. What can you share with us, Donna?
Well, 24th, his preliminary hearing begins in the case with the Canadian girl who sued him and got, you know, This is a girl that he knew from the University of Pennsylvania, but she was Canadian, and she said he gave her drugs, she passed out, and he took physical sexual advantage of her. And she sued, and she went to the police, and she went to the prosecutors, and they basically said, yeah, you know, we're not going to touch this one. We don't believe, you know, there's enough evidence. So once all these other women started coming out of the woodwork, And she got together early on and started interviewing other people, and so they went in with something like 13 or 15 other women that had similar stories. So that's what kicked all this off. And still she couldn't get a criminal case. But now there's a new district attorney, and this district attorney was elected on the premise that, wait a minute, we're going to take another look at this, because there are some issues here that are not limited by the statute of limitations, and there's also the civil case. So her case goes back to court on the 24th of May. And just in general, across the nation, he's got around 50 different women over a 50-year span who have different stories. Some say that they took pills from him. Some say that they drank something and passed out. Some say he tried to give them something and they ran out of the room. So you have different women, different stories, and different things happen. You know, some had full-on sex. He had full-on sex with them, which he claims was consensual, but you cannot, you can't have a consensual sexual encounter with somebody who's passed out.
Exactly.
You know, but then the statute of limitations. So anyway, all these women have different aspects. Well, next week's Globe, and I believe it will be next week. It could be the week after, but it's going to be an app. I just finished it last night. It's going to be a game changer. It's something that suggests he had interest in minors. Now, six of the 50 women claim what happened to them was when they were children or under the age of 18.
Right, yep.
So the youngest one that still is going to court, which was a 2004 event that happened at the Playboy Mansion, she was 15, and that's one of Gloria Allred's people. That was thrown out of the criminal case because of the statute, but now there's a civil case, and she's also suing Hugh Hefner, who she says knew all about this. I mean, he gave Cosby a room and knew he was dosing women and taking them to that room. So, but my story has to do with, you know, I'd have to say a real connection with Cosby and an obsession with teenage girls.
That wouldn't surprise me. Yeah.
Adolescent girls. So this is really, you know, completely fresh, and there's lots of proof for this. And, you know, we'll see if this goes, explodes into something. But,
well, I'm sure.
You know, it's going to be happy drip, drip, drip on him, because you've got women in many states, and he finishes one case, he goes through the next case, and the next, and you know, he's got a lot of money and a lot of attorneys who are trying to stave this off as much as possible.
Yeah. And, you know, we're seeing some of Woody Allen in the news and, of course, Polanski over the years in the news. And who knows, there'll probably be someone else in the future with something that comes up from the past, sexual deviancy or whatever. And
I could name a million of them, but I don't want to get sued.
And I'm sure, because you being involved in the industry can probably tell many stories, but they would get you in trouble. You know, Donna, we've got 5 minutes left, and I want to ask you this question. I don't know if you can do it in 5 minutes or not, but we know, and I mean it, because it's a pretty wide open question. You know, we watched Cosby. I remember Cosby from I Spy and the early Johnny Carson shows and all of that. And these other, you know, never a Polanski fan or a Woody Allen, absolutely. But we see these icons, so to speak, that all of a sudden 10, 20, 30 years later, the victims who have been terrified to come forward now. Do you think there'll ever be justice for these victims? And really, what is justice?
Sometimes just coming forward and then encouraging other women. I mean, because some of these women have nothing to sue, so let them sue.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have nothing to lose. They don't own anything, so let them tell their stories and take their chances if they can find an attorney who will do that. Or just come, go to the press and tell your story. At least you're feeling some relief from that.
Yeah.
But it also brings out, that's why there are now 50 women who have said, you know, with their various stories with Cosby, it brings out more and more people. And these are not women who really are going to gain anything. It's horrible for them to have to relive this stuff. But, you know, the absolute maddening thing is that a lot of people just say, well, they're after something. They're, you know, Mia Farrow brainwashed her daughter. There's no proof. There's such a segment of population who, just because somebody is popular, known, wealthy, you think, oh, they don't do that. No, they do that. And now we're in a time where there are photos and videos and training, you know, trading imagery. And that's what perverts who are civilians do. It's a huge business. So collectors of child porn and stuff, they're the lowest of the low, and there is no cure. And when they go unpunished, they get confident and they do more and worse. So it's really never ending. I'm very convinced that, I know for a fact, I know the Roman Polanski case, like, chapter and verse, but I'm absolutely sure there. But in that case, the woman has taken, she got $600,000 to keep supporting him. So
yep.
She's the one who's trying to make this go away.
Yep. No, and
but three sons. If she had three daughters, I wonder if she would do that.
Good point. Yeah, very.
But by the way, she was when she was 8 years old. Some neighbor kid, slept with her. So her mother didn't do anything about that then. So she's kind of been grown up into this, this kind of hippie mentality mom who said, you know, oh, it's just kids experimenting, and let her go off with Polanski.
Yeah.
So. Creepy.
Absolutely. Donna Kaufman, good friend of the program, her book, Final Exams with Dr. Cyril Wecht, available at Planet Ann Rules and on the Internet. Click on the show notes to find out more about her. Please give my best to the doctor next time you're talking to him, and I can't wait to have you both on again sometime.
Oh, you know, we'd love to. I know we're really going to enjoy coming on with our new book. Is there anything, by the way, any news on Joran van der Sloot or that case that scared monkeys nose?
Yeah, you know, not too much lately, but he tries every so often to get back into the media with, okay, I'll probably tell you the story now. And
yeah.
He's exactly where he should be. And there's a special place in hell for him, too.
Well, and I just wait. How long will it be before we see a TV movie, a 6-part, 10-part TV movie about, you know, poor Joran killed by the press?
You know what? You're probably not far off there, and that's one that I won't be watching, that's for sure.
Yes, exactly.
Anyway, thank you, Donna. Always a pleasure.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate talking to you always, Dana.
Okay, have fun in California.
All righty.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. That's Donna Kaufman. She's a true crime author, investigative journalist. She writes for The Globe and The Inquirer, and she writes crime books with Cyril Wecht, probably one of the most prolific forensic pathologists out there, who's done work on all the celebrity cases and, well, you name it. You know, I talked a little bit earlier about the decriminalization or the legalization of marijuana in some states in the United States and what the Trudeau government is going to do in Canada in the new year. And it just makes you wonder why in this era of political correctness that some prosecutors and police chiefs aren't standing up and telling the government, are you sure you really want to do this? But instead, police chiefs and governments are planning how to handle the effects now of decriminalization or legalization of marijuana. And it just makes you wonder what's gone wrong with society. Municipal governments and those that care in elected offices, or Joe and Mary that live at home and listen to this program or watch this show, kind of raise their eyebrows and say, well, you know, what can we do? I know that political correctness is good in some cases, but when it comes to the legalization or decriminalization of marijuana, it's not. So thank you. Thank you for listening here at Scared Monkeys Radio and watching on Access 7 or Channel 70. My name is Dana Pretzer, and we'll see you again real soon.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.